Today, our guest speaker is Dr. Frank Dennis. He is a medical doctor, a surgeon, a missionary who has served in Taiwan for many years with his wife. And so we are privileged that he is here to share with us today. Come on up, Dr. Dennis, if you would. I'm eager to hear from him because he's a young man at 90 plus, I believe, who serves the Lord faithfully. I appreciate that. So.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here. I'd like to ask special prayer for my wife, who fell yesterday. She had a stroke 12 years ago. I'm her caregiver, and I always watch her very carefully, and as we were in the garage getting ready to get in a car, she didn't see a little difference in height. Down she went, and she broke her arm right below the joint. So she is now in the hospital, and the orthopedic surgeon is probably making rounds. And I turned off my phone, but I told him to call me, so there's a problem. but anyway, we'll find out. Our plan was to leave Tuesday to go back to Colorado Springs, which is our home. And that may be on hold for a while. We'll just have to see what happens. But anyway, so, you know, I'm talking about open doors. And I'm 90 years old, and I'm still having opportunities to speak in a Chinese church twice a month in Colorado Springs. I've had opportunities to speak in churches in California, Arizona, Washington, Vancouver, Boston. And I'm thinking, you know, when should I quit? And I guess the answer is, when God quits opening doors, I'll quit, or when I can't do it anymore. So I want to encourage you today to look for the open doors that He has opened to you. There's every Christian is a member of Christ's body. And so Jesus spoke to His church in the book of Revelation, and He said that I've set before you open doors. And He expects them to go through those open doors and be His witnesses for wherever it is. I'm going to tell first of all about some of the doors that opened to us when we went to Taiwan. In college at the University of Minnesota, I was active in intervarsity. And there was a couple, a bunch of young people praying together and so forth. And one couple fell in love, and I was the best man at their wedding. And they researched different missions, and they decided to go to Africa with the Evangelical Alliance Mission. Called Team. When there, some years later, they had a little baby boy. When that baby boy was 1 year old, he got pneumonia and died. They had no medical care, they had no doctor, no hospital. And by that time, I was in medical school. So I made a resolution that I'm going to go to Southern Rhodesia and be a doctor, so that won't be happening. Not just the missionaries were dying, but others as well. 7 years later, I finished surgery training and Bible school and was all set to go just as Team opened a hospital in Southern Rhodesia, now called Zimbabwe. So I wrote them, I had been a candidate for some years with them, and I said, okay, I'm ready to go to your new hospital. And I got a letter back that said, well, we don't need you at that hospital because we have three doctors signed up for it, but we have a letter from Formosa. I didn't even know where Formosa was. And they said, the tribal people in Formosa, in the southeast province, have TB, fractures that weren't set right, late-stage disease, and trachoma, which is a rickettsial eye infection that the Chinese call sand eyes. It's very rare in America. Our eye doctor has never seen a case, but at that time it was endemic in the southwestern tribes. I took my training in the Navajo Hospital at Fort Defiance, Arizona, and I had worked on, guess what? TB, fractures that weren't set right, late-stage disease when the Sing didn't work and the tribal medicine didn't work, and trachoma. It was a public health hospital. I went into schools to check kids for trachoma. Well, it's kind of like tracking an elephant through mud to not be able to see that this was God's preparing me, not for China, not for Africa, but for Taiwan. I still never have treated a case of malaria, which would have been very standard, and all those parasites and stuff that they have in Africa. So I didn't know anything about that. So off we went in... Okay, next slide. There you go. Off we went in a freighter, if you can believe, with four kids, and this was our oldest son. He was number three. And the next slide... And we end up in Taiwan, looking much younger than I look today, and totally ignorant of Chinese culture, Chinese language. We didn't know anything. The first words we learned in Chinese was Wenjiujie Joshibahao, our address, because our co-workers thought, if you guys get lost, there's not an English sign in the whole city of Taipei, unless it's advertising Coca-Cola. So next slide. And we had a baby born in the Pingdong Christian Hospital. We spent 2 years in Taipei learning Mandarin. And then for 2 years, I worked in a Norwegian hospital founded by the same man who founded the team mission. It was called the Norwegian Alliance Mission. And I was doing polio surgery and general surgery, relieving two of their surgeons, one to go home to Norway 1 year, and then the other one the next year. And during that time, we went over the mountains to the east coast. Try the next slide. And our little boy, the youngest one that was born in Pingdong, grew up surrounded by tribal people who spoke Mandarin, Taiwanese, and Amis tribal language. So he spoke four languages by the time he was 5 years old. His Taiwanese is still just kind of a little bit mama hoo hoo. What you can kind of get along a little bit. His Mandarin is pretty good, and he's totally forgot the Amis because there's no one. The only word we remember in Amis is mama, which means father. Very interesting. So the next slide. When we went to Taiwan, it was very backward. Taipei even had hardly any private cars. It was mostly trucks and pedicabs. And next slide. And when we went to, after 4 years on the west side of the island, I should say that during the two years at Pingdong, I would go over the mountains to the west side, to the east side of the island, to that cut off by mountains area where we had six tribes and a lot of Kujia Hakka people, as well as Taiwanese and mainland speakers. So our hospital that we later built had 10 languages going, if you don't count English, because English didn't count. Very confusing situation. Well, during this time, were our five children. They all grew up speaking Mandarin. They all speak Mandarin still. And the oldest worked for 30 years in China. I'll mention a little bit later. As an unusual open door opened for her and her husband. But the second daughter worked in Mexico as a missionary for 30 years and is still active, although she now lives in Indianapolis. And she goes back and kind of consults with their various works with elderly people, battered women, drug rehab program, and churches. So growing up in those situations gave them an attitude. I often ask the kids, you know, you didn't have a lot of the advantages that kids that grow up in the States have. How do you feel about them? Are you a little angry at us? They said, Dad, you know, we can fit into any culture anywhere. We have had so much experience with other types of people that we're at home anywhere, and they truly are. They get along. They have had a wonderful life. Back to that one. Taidong is on the east coast, and it's kind of isolated by those mountains that you see, between the mountains and the sea. I tell people it's sort of the Hawaii of Taiwan. It has ocean, it has beaches, it has surfing, it has mountains, it has waterfalls, it has hot springs. What it doesn't have is a lot of what the Chinese call runao. Now, those of you who know Chinese know runao means hot and lively, means nightlife and excitement and big stores and all that kind of stuff. It has pure air and a quiet, peaceful place. When we first went home on our first furlough, we went out in 1961. And in 1967, we went home on our furlough. The city of 100,000 people had 3 stoplights, and they turned them off at 9 o'clock at night. So that'll give you a little idea of how that went. They had one stretch of pavement, 100 yards long, between the train station and the bus station. Everything else was gravel roads with plenty of cow manure because they had a lot of ox carts. So next. We built a hospital, and I will tell you why. When I went, I thought, really, you know, it's more important to prevent disease than to cure disease. And that's true. However, if you're about to have a baby and you have a placenta previa, or you've broken your leg, or you have appendicitis, preventive medicine doesn't work too well. So I had learned as broad a surgical base as I could possibly learn, which is why I took my training on the Navajo reservation, because they took care of whatever happened to the Navajo people. And of course, the Navajos had their own bone setters. They had their own medicine men. They did their sings and their dances, and they had herbal medicine. And so what I learned there fit perfectly with what we had here. While at the Pingdong Hospital, I would go over the mountains, a rather grueling 6-hour drive on mountain gravel roads, and see patients in churches, take a mobile clinic set up, just to find out what the medical needs really were in that county. I had been praying, we had 1 year left before we'd come back to the States, and I needed to know if we should try to get money and equipment for a hospital. So I really laid this before the Lord. On a Chinese New Year's, I took our big kind of an ambulance, a Chevy carry-all, set up like an ambulance, 5 medical students from the Kaohsiung Medical College, and also a lot of medicine. And over we went to see patients in the churches, as I had been doing for some time. This particular day, we were just closing up the clinic, and here comes a man that's as yellow as a pumpkin. 2 men are basically kind of carrying him, distended abdomen, terrible pain in his belly, and sort of the obvious case of a liver abscess. Well, in this business of building a hospital, I'd made friends with a white surgeon doctor there, Dr. Dong. And he said, you can use our operating room anytime. You don't need a hospital. So we go to Dr. Dong's hospital, and it's all locked up. He had gone home, as Chinese do on Chinese New Year's, except when there's coronavirus. And the place was closed up. So I went to the provincial hospital, and there was a Dr. Xie there. Dr. Xie took one look at my patient and said, no way, he's going to die. And we don't want anybody dying in our hospital. Give us a bad reputation. Well, I guess he's got a point there. But I said, look, if we don't do anything and that ruptures internally, he's dead, right? Right. I think if we drain the pus, I think we can save him. I'm a foreigner. I'll take the blame. I can run. So we finally got him admitted to the hospital, and without going into too many details, everything that could go wrong did go wrong, except that he survived. They didn't have any blood any blood donors and any blood bank. So we coerced his brother. He was going to give blood. Well, we turned our back. We thought he went to the lab. No, he went to a bar. And we tracked him down. He was getting drunk. And he was feeling no pain when he finally did give blood. And when we gave that blood, the patient broke out in hives all over, probably from the alcohol. So I asked the nurse, now he's in the operating room, we were giving his blood. And, well, I should make more detail. The blood was going drip, drip, drip. And he's losing a lot of blood from this. We've opened up, got a pus of a quart of pus out of his liver and lost a fair amount of blood. Give the blood faster. They have no clue how to give the blood faster. So I said, well, you take a blood pressure cuff, and you take the bulb and the rubber hose, and you put a needle in the end, and you put it in the airway in the bottle, and you pump. And I'm telling them all this in Mandarin. They've never seen it or done it before. Finally, we get the blood going. Then he breaks out in hives. I say, okay, let's give 50 milligrams of Benadryl, or they call it Bena, IV. Well, we only give 10 milligrams, and we always give it under the skin. I'm telling you, please give it IV, like now. And, you know, step by everything, I've got to argue. It came to me that it isn't a surgeon, it's a team that knows how to work together. So at that point, I decided we're going to have a hospital. Well, that man whose name was Fong Ulf, Amish man, lived many, many years, and every time we went to visit, he would give my wife a live chicken. Her suggestion, let's don't go see Fong Ulf again. Actually, we had a neighbor that loved our live chicken, so Sally is the old-fashioned cook, but not that old-fashioned. Anyway, so we came home to the States, and I began to go into hospitals and look for equipment. And in a way, I'm very embarrassed to ask people for things. But there was a friend who is actually a grade school classmate of my wife in Minneapolis. And he had a truck. And he would shamelessly beg for stuff at hospitals. And we would go into basements of hospitals. And in America, you know, if there's a newer model, you got to have it. Partly medical legal, I think. So in one hospital, we found this beautiful operating table, but it was not electric. And now all operating tables are electric. This did all the stuff, tipped and bent and all the thing. But it didn't have any attachments. Well, an operating table needs a lot of attachments. But I said, I'll take it. I like it. It's great because I don't want an electric table because I have a lot of power failures. So in another hospital basement, the other side of town, there's a big box of, guess what? Hospital operating table attachments. There's many corp companies that make them, and I'm thinking, will these fit that? They did. And we saw this kind of thing over and over again. So we went out with 30 crates of equipment. And I've got to tell a couple of more stories about that, because one of the things that we had was a portable x-ray machine. But that got hung up in customs. And so by the time we were operating and things were going, I needed that x-ray machine. And there were a bunch of workmen right there at the back of the hospital when the truck brought it. But these two men that were with the truck decided they would offload it by themselves. It was in a wooden crate that weighed 800 pounds. What do you suppose happened? It's a wonder one of them didn't get killed. They dropped the crate, and it broke into pieces just as I was going home to lunch. And right in front of me, it broke open, and the tube went tinkle, 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 rolling right towards me. $2,000 for a tube, by the way. Now, we're supposed to, in everything, give thanks, right? I was having a little trouble with that day. I don't know what I said to the men, but they had just said, help. They got 10 workmen sitting there building the hospital, eating lunch, doing nothing, just watching this excitement. I kind of prayed and I said, okay, Lord, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm a surgeon. I do a lot of orthopedics. I need an x-ray machine. I need two x-ray, portable x-ray machines for the hip surgery that we did. Shortly after that, I went back to the States to get equipment for the pediatric wing that we were building. And a friend in California was on the board of Direct Relief, which gives free medical stuff to hospitals that need it. So I went there. They had a lot of cystoscopes that were all jumbled together. Why anyone would take them out of their original boxes, I don't know. But I happen to know a lot about urology. So I spent several hours putting all these cystoscopes together right and in the right boxes. And I noticed they had a portable x-ray machine, very much like the one that dropped at the back door. So I said, how about that x-ray machine? Well, we're going to give it to a hospital that doesn't have one. Now, when I left the hospital, I didn't know if I had one or not. It had been dropped, it hadn't been repaired, and they were working on it. So I told them the story, and they said, okay, take it. Well, what happened, the good thing that God brought out of that was that when we do hip surgery, like a fractured hip, you need an AP and a lateral x-ray. And so with one machine, you have to bring it over the table and take a picture, and then you have to pull it down and put it under the drapes and try to get it right. But with two machines, you start out with the one for the lateral under the drapes, and you don't touch it all during surgery. So the blessing was, we happened to be the only hospital in the county at that time that was nailing hip fractures. And so we had finally able to do that with two operating. So I was able to give thanks. That time was a little easier to be thankful. Now we don't use that. We use a C-arm x-ray. And we are finally able to actually buy a C-arm, and it moves freely, and you don't have to, you just look at it live. But technology has changed a bit, in case you hadn't noticed lately. It's just really a lot of changes. So I've got to tell you a few things that how God really works miracles for us. The having that surgery on Fong Oath was a direct answer to prayer, but that's not a miracle. But I want to tell you about when we had first moved to Taidong. I went to, what's the next slide, I think? Oh, yes, this slide. In the lobby of the hospital that we built, this is my lovely wife of 66 years now, who broke her arm yesterday when she fell and is in the hospital right now. And in Chinese, that says, Yushan Tong Gong, with workers together with God. We're not working for God, we are working with God. Don't forget that. Because if you're working with God, He is working with you, right? So one time we were going up from Taidong to Hualien, driving on the very backward primitive roads. The bridges were railroad bridges, and there was a guy that would tell you if a train was coming, which was very nice of him. And we got to the halfway point, the city of Yuli. Now, I had never been in Yuli. Next slide. I had never been in Yuli before. But I knew there was a missionary there I had met at a meeting on the West Coast. So I asked, where does the foreigner live? And everyone knew. So I went to his house, knocked on the door, and he opened the door and said, Frank, you're an answer to prayer. And I said, well, that's a friendly greeting. What does that mean? He said, right now, one of the elders in our Bunan church is on the operating table. The doctors want to cut off his leg. He was bit by a 100-pacer snake, and they want to amputate his leg. But he's a mountain man, and the family says he'd be better off dead than to have only one leg in the mountains. So let's go. And I'm thinking to myself, right. I mean, I'm a foreigner, never been in this city before in my life. How am I going to go in and tell him what to do? But let's go look. We got to the hospital and looked in the operating room. Everybody was in there. Small hospital, and when I opened the door, a voice behind a mask said, in Mandarin, he said, Tani Sheng, Jin Lai Bang Ma, Dr. Dennis, come in and help us. And I said, well, who are you? And he said, I'm Dr. Lee. I used to be at the, last year I was at the Air Force Hospital in Jai. I took a week vacation and came to Pingdong, and you taught me polio surgery. Now, what are the odds of that? You think that one through. I've never been in this town in my life. I knock on the door, and they are praying for this guy on the table. And I walk in there, and one of the people who considers me his teacher is the surgeon, now transferred to that place. Well, I asked him, why do you want to cut off his leg? He was bleeding from everywhere. Very much like a rattlesnake. He had hemotoxic venom. And he was bleeding from his nose, from his urinary catheter, from the wounds. He had cut the with his knife, he'd cut the wounds and his leg. And I said, well, why amputate? Well, if we tie off these bleeders with silk, it'll get infected. And I said, well, don't use silk. Use catgut, absorbable suture. Well, we don't have any. And one of the nurses said, oh, yeah, there's some in the storeroom. No one ever uses it. So that was my advice. But I said, the main thing is give him lots of blood, because he needs fresh blood, freshly donated. And they had plastic bags because it was a military veterans and provincial hospital. That's good, because the plastic bags will still have the blood platelets, so be the very best. So give him as much as he needs for what he loses. And I left. That was like 2 hours of my life. Later I heard the story. People came in to donate blood in large numbers. At that time, the Chinese were very afraid of giving blood. Your life is in the blood, so we don't want to lose any of it, right? That was their philosophy. And so usually they would buy blood from what they call the blood oxen, the xianyou, and the blood cows. And these were professional donors who didn't have very good blood, because that's all they did for a living was donate blood. And they didn't have a great lifestyle either. For this guy, people came in large numbers. And the nurses and staff at the hospital said, is this guy a big chief or something? Why would so many people be giving blood? No, they said, he's our brother in Christ. We love him. We're glad Jesus gave his whole life for us. And when that man got well, he went all over the mountains speaking in the tribal churches and said, you know, I was saved. My life was saved by the people who gave their blood. They love me enough to give their blood. And Jesus saves you from the sting of that old serpent, Satan, because he gave all his blood for you. He died for you. And a lot of people who never understood the gospel before, they had no idea what these Christians do or what's this all about, they got it. They actually saw that Jesus died to save us, just like these people gave their blood to save their friend. So, another slide, please. And you know, before I'm giving this talk to you, because I want you to go through doors. But as a matter of fact, next, if you don't open the door for Jesus, you're not in this game at all. You're just a spectator. He's not going to be opening any doors for you because you're not on his team. So next slide. This picture depicts Jesus standing outside the door. And if you look at the lighter part, it looks like a heart. And on that door, there's no doorknob on the outside. It opens from the inside. And that's a beautiful picture of our hearts. We have to personally open our door to Jesus and invite him to come in. He wants to come in. He wants to come in and fellowship with us. But if we don't accept him, he's not going to break that door down. Love knocks pretty loudly, but it won't break the door down. Next. We often say this, many Christians have memorized, for by grace you are saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And they quit. No works, right? But the next verse says, you are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which he has prepared in advance for you to do. Let me illustrate. To get into the surgery program I wanted at Fort Defiance, I saw that this was, they were doing all kinds of surgery. They did urology, OBGYN, a lot of plastic surgery on bad burns, and that was the kind of training I wanted. I didn't want to be a board surgeon. I wanted to just be able to do all kinds of stuff. And to get into that program, I had to first get anesthesia training. They didn't need another resident. They needed someone to give anesthesia. So they sent me to New York, special anesthesia training, and I came back and on the one hand did anesthesia, on the other hand, and it was a killer time. My kids said, they pointed to the hospital, that's where Daddy lives, because I was on both surgery call and anesthesia call. And so when the other guys that were in the surgery needed anesthesia, I got in on that too. But there was a male nurse anesthetist that came, young man, And so basically, I basically did just the ones, I got him started, but I basically did the ones that were really critical and babies. 5 years later, I'm in Taiwan, in Pingdong doing polio surgery. A young doctor from Taipei came down to learn these polio operations so he could start a program in Taipei. And one of our missionaries had a baby with intestinal atresia, meaning no dirty diapers and vomiting everything for 3 days. So they called me to go there, and I asked Dr. Fan Hongar, would you go with me? Would the two of us be better than one? When we got to the Jai Christian Hospital where this baby was, we found out their nurse anesthetist had gone on a mountain clinic, and I had to give the anesthesia to that baby. That little kid, he did well. Dr. Fan did the operation. I did the anesthesia. And this little baby grew up and went to Western China, to the Muslim tribe, the Uyghur tribe, way out in Western China. So God prepared me in advance for a job that he had 5 years later. God knows the future. Isn't that cool to work for someone that knows the future and who will set you up to do what needs to be done? Next slide. So, if you haven't gotten in this game, I want to invite you to do it. Jesus wants to come in. Many people want to run their own life. I don't want to run my own life. I want Jesus to run my life. He does a much better job than I do. Try it. Accept the fact that you can't do it all yourself. You need him to have a good life. Next. Yeah, next slide. Okay, I want to just, I've had many opportunities since I retired. A lot of missionaries retire, and they never get back to the field where they worked. I retired, and I have been back to Taiwan many, many times, because partly these people, next slide, have opened the door for me to get into churches, schools, so forth. And actually, they also wrote a book, The Fourth Grade Reader, for all the kids in the Guoshao, the government grade schools in Taiwan, all read about Papa and Mama Tan, who came and built a hospital for the tribal people. So I've been in many, many schools, all kinds of fun, and I've enjoyed it very much. The next slide. These people have set me up Chinese churches in Arizona, California, Washington State, Vancouver, and even in Boston. Friend of a friend, you know. Next. Yeah, next. What I really enjoy is speaking to foremost of fellowships in cities, because about half of those folks aren't Christians, and really that's a great opportunity. Next. And then I want to tell you about my oldest daughter and her husband. Next slide. My son-in-law, Finn Torgerson, in this picture, is the grandson of a Norwegian missionary that went to the city of Utsu. Yeah. That's not right. Hechu. The bend in the river. Hechu. Where Inner Mongolia, Shanxi and Shanxi all come together, right at the bend in the Yellow River. And he was there as a missionary for 20 years. In 1939, the Japanese began bombing, and refugees poured into his station. At one point, he had 1,000 people there. He was feeding and helping with wounds and so forth. The Japanese left him alone because he put out a big Norwegian flag, and Norway was neutral. When Norway joined the Allies, then they bombed him. His house was hit, he was killed, and his widow said she was in the house with him. She was not injured. She said that's the only time in her many years of following the Lord that she ever heard a clear voice from God. He said, What I do now, you don't know, but you will understand later. I met her when I was at the University of Minnesota. She had a group of Chinese students, actually, and she established the largest Chinese church in the Twin Cities called the Twin City Christian, Chinese Christian Church, the T4C, they call it. And, but 50 years after this event, in 1989, the Shanxi provincial government contacted the family and said, would your family be willing to come back and do the good work of your ancestor? Well, that happened to be my son-in-law, Finn, and they were missionaries in Indonesia. And his father, who wrote the letter asking for someone to come because the tribal people had TB and all that stuff, and they were the active missionaries. And so they said, well, you know, we're not only Christians, we're missionaries. We know that, the government official said, but we want people like you who really care about Lao Bai Xing, the common people. You're not in it for yourselves. You're not in it for fame. You're not going to write a PhD paper. You want to just really help people. So they said, okay, we'll come. What we have to do is, we have to eat our own wives' cooking and live in our own apartment. We can't stay in a hotel, which was the requirement at that time in Shanxi province. So they very openly went in and established an organization that's still doing great work there. Totally everything's above board. The government knows they're Christians. They follow all the rules, and they're very good. And even President Xi isn't giving them a bad time yet. We hope it'll stay that way. Next slide. And they put up a big monument. This says in memory of Pastor, and on the backside it tells about what he did, how he left his home and country, came and helped the Chinese people to serve his God. And so that's been a wide, wide open door. Many other missions were pretending to teach English, but trying to really work underground. This was very open and one of the first ones to do that. Next. Yeah, next. Okay. I do want to talk, because I'm a surgeon, this group, the Pan-African Association of Christian Surgeons, next, is training African doctors with an MD to be surgeons in 5 years, and they need teachers. And so I'm trying to stir up ethnic Chinese surgeons to get out there and do some good. The Chinese rise to the top in education, in business, in medicine. And in missions, they're way down here. This outfit has a lot of teachers and not one single Chinese. Next. Yeah, next. These folks went out with them. Next. Next. And then another thing, some countries are totally closed. Like Bhutan is a totally closed country. No missionary can go in. Even a foreigner has to go in as a tourist. You have to pay big money to just go in. But the idea, next, is the Yoders actually trained Indians from India to go in and be missionaries because a person with an Indian passport could just walk right into Bhutan. And so they have started a lot of churches in many villages by these Indian missionaries. Where you can't go, get someone else to go. Next. Yeah, just three more slides. Bing, bing, bing. Yeah, next. Okay, and then, of course, our friend that I gave the anesthesia to has been working in Xinjiang, and he's been kicked out, of course. All foreigners have been kicked out of Xinjiang, and he has a website. He's had over 100,000 hits on his website, and he gets the gospel with SD cards and the thumb drives. Next. Yeah, next. Okay. So, next. Jesus said, preach this gospel everywhere. And I want to challenge you young people. I really believe that your generation can reach just about every person on earth with the gospel. How? By technology. Next. Some new ways. Next. Whoops. Next. Wow, that whole thing wasn't there. Well, that slide was about the Jesus Film Project. And the Jesus Film Project has the entire Jesus film dubbed. With technology, they can dub it so it really looks like the characters are speaking the language. They are in 1,800 languages, and they can add one in about 2 months. Not as hard as translating the whole Bible, and you don't have to teach people to read. So they have teams that go out into all kinds. I'd love to tell stories about the amazing situations they get into where people are converted and become Christians. The problem is all they know is the dialogue of the movie. And they also need the Bible like Wycliffe translates, and they need Bible teaching. And that's kind of a boots-on-the-ground project. These people sign cards. Yes, I want to be a Christian. What Jesus did is incredible. And they believe in Him, but they have no teaching. And so we need boots on the ground for that. Next. And this is one of the technologies. That in little chip. The next slide, please. This tiny little chip by the penny there, smaller than a penny, can hold the entire Jesus film. Is that amazing or what? And they go into villages with a hotspot that has no Wi-Fi. And with the hotspot, people's phones light up and they look. We have people in Papua who don't have clothes and they have smartphones. Da-da! they tell me, and I didn't believe it, but other people said, there are more cell phones in Taiwan than people, and that includes babies. Duh, because people have 2 and 3 cell phones. They're much cheaper. You go into a 7-Eleven and charge it up. So with today's technology, we can get the gospel everywhere. And I'm going to challenge you to work on that. What is your next slide? What can you do? How many of you can do CPR? Have you studied that? Okay, the rest of you, get busy. Learn it. You can save a life. I'm serious. You can save a life. And learn to do it. Well, what about spiritual CPR? Next. Oh, this was in an airport. And you can put your hands on and it tells you you're doing it wrong, you're doing it too fast, you're not doing it right. And so even this much can save a life. Next. Well, how about spiritual CPR? Next slide. Next slide. There was a plane that was hijacked in 1996. The whole world knew about it. The terrorists told them to go to a destination they could not reach with the fuel they had. And everybody knew it was going to crash. So other planes came alongside, and one of them took this picture. People were told to put on their seat belts, put their heads down, all that. Andy Meekins was a missionary from Africa going home to London. And instead of buckling his seat belt, he started in first class and went all the way through the plane telling people the gospel. We know this because 50 people survived that crash. Over 100 died. But 50 people survived. And one of them was a flight attendant that accepted the Lord and told this story. This was Andy Meekin's last door, and he was ready to go through it. And many people heard the gospel, possibly for the first time, knowing they were going to die or thinking they were going to die. So are you ready? Find your open door and go through it. Next. Find your open door. Every Christian has open doors, many of them every day. Are you ready to go through? Are you prepared? Be that way. Get prepared. Thank you very much.